Hi, this is Pat Blythe, and welcome to Love the Music. Today is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022. These are the Pandemic Interviews, Conversations in a Changing Time. I have with me Sasha Tukach, drummer, and Brian Hoag, singer, songwriter, keyboard player, guitar player from Conduit. Both of them are from Conduit. Sasha's played with the Blushing Brides. And Brian, I don't know a lot about your background, and I'm not going to get into it here, but I am going to ask the two of you, and I'll start with Brian, to introduce yourself and provide, in your own words, a little bit about yourself.
Well, born in Oakville, Ontario, 1972. Started playing guitar at 13 and made my way through until started playing in bands, playing whether it was cover songs or just learning other people's music. Later on, started writing original material with just different people. And started getting into electronic music, like specifically industrial music. Prior to that, was mostly into, hard rock and heavy metal and things of that nature. I just got really turned on by things like Nine Inch Nails, and then I heard Tori Amos, and I was completely floored. I had never played, a keyboard or had aspirations to do that at all, but just found myself kind of leaning towards, voices that weren't a guitar. And then that just turned into synthesis, and at that point started writing songs that would ultimately become Conduit, and that would have been in probably the early 90s, and yada yada yada, and now we're here.
And now we're here. So where did the name Conduit come from?
The name Conduit came from an old drummer that I used to play with, and his name was Barry White. And just one day he just said, "Hey, you know, it'd be a really great name for a band." He said Conduit, and I sat there. I looked at it on a piece of paper and thought, "Oh, well, you know what? This is actually really a great name, because we were so influenced by a lot of different stuff." And I adopted the name, and the spelling of it came about where, this is going back to when I started working with synthesizers, and one of them had a floppy disk drive on it. I had labeled in the software one of the songs. I had labeled it as Conduit, but like the correct spelling, and I went to go save another version of it, but I wanted to use like the same song title, but I didn't want to overwrite it. So I just quickly put a zero and a one in place of the O and the I. And that's how it stuck. And that was, like 95. And it just looked cool. So I figured, hey, you know what? I'm just going to keep this and just keep doing it. And that's how the name came about. That's kind of
weird. You're a conduit for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sasha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Happy anniversary, 1 year anniversary on your podcast. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, today is 1 year. That's right. Wow.
Fantastic news, and thanks for having us.
And thank you for coming, especially all the way from Orangeville. Oh my God. That was
thank
a
you.
Long way. That's great. So Sasha, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born with an identity crisis, and I carry that with me to this day. I'm a drummer. I was born into a household of music appreciators. And at a very early age, it was obvious that I was destined to destroy my life in music. 58 years later, I have, for the last 2 years, 3 years, been working with Brian. We met over some spicy food in the West End. Through a dear friend of ours, who also makes appearances on recordings with the band. And here we are. I'm drumming and percussing and sticking my nose into places where they shouldn't be. And
now you've been drumming, were drumming, or still are drumming for Blushing Brides.
I have
as
been
well.
Drumming with a number of bands. Yeah. That band, which is the world's most dangerous tribute to the Rolling Stones, I've been with them since 1987 after a tour got canceled, a national tour got canceled. And they took me on board as a percussionist. At that time, Doug Inglis was playing drums.
Okay.
And I've somehow managed to stick around in, you know, various chairs within that group. I still have recorded with many different bands and engineered and mixed and mangled, and I've had the great fortune of being called to production and road manage an artist by the name of Estero back in the 90s. She was kind of a big deal for a hot minute, and I was out with Tom Cochran. I've been a keyboard tech and drum tech, production manager. I kind of stick my nose into all these different places because it's all part of the industry.
Man of many talents.
And
when I first started
doing that, I realized that it's a great for all musicians to do is to serve the master, serve the musician, serve the show, so that you realize what it takes to put on a show and how to comport yourself within a larger production. It's okay to be a dick, you know, when you're with yourself, but when you're touring with a group of 40 plus people, being a dick is not so good.
And the master ultimately is the music.
Absolutely.
So, open question, what did you guys expect to be doing this past year? And how are you proceeding into 2021? We're 6 months in now.
Yeah, amazing, right?
I know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we had ambitions to get this new record done.
A little bit earlier, maybe.
Yeah, a lot faster, a lot sooner. So when the initial lockdowns came, it was, what do we do? And initially we're thinking, okay, well, you know, we can't go out anywhere. We can't really do anything. Let's use the time to get this thing done.
And so the record grew because of it. I think we had the ability to sit back and reflect a little bit and listen and not feel such pressure to, you know, complete in a shorter period of time. So we gave ourselves a more open schedule, I would say, right, in order to be able to explore things within each song and within the larger construct of an album, right?
Exactly. And we didn't have any ambitions to go out and play, do any shows, like, you know, during that time. So it just allowed us to, I think, just, you know, hunker down and focus on, you know, the task at hand and really analyze it and evaluate what we were doing.
So this has been keeping you busy over the past year.
Yeah.
So what are the plans for the album now? We're sort of coming out of
Well, we're
a little bit inch by inch lockdown.
Yeah, the focus is still first and foremost the record, and Brian just acquired a new camera, so of course there's the visual aspect, and Brian's been since the beginning of the band has always been managing the visual content, and has gone to great lengths to capture and edit together, both for the live show and for the song videos. All the content. So we're just carrying on. It's kind of business as usual, except that we're not face-to-face as much, right?
So what's changed over the past year? I mean, is relevancy important to the two of you? Or has the pandemic affected the writing or your approach to the music of the album?
Like, in terms of relevance, no. I don't really pay attention to that at all. You know, I mean, ultimately, you know, we do this for ourselves. You know, we write for ourselves, and if someone else, you know, likes it, then that's a bonus. But this is just something that you need to exercise yourself. I mean, we would do, if there was nobody to listen to it, or you could never do a show or anything like that, I think we would still be compelled to write music. For me, at least, and I can't speak for Sash, but
well, you could try.
Okay, I'm going to do it. You have to do it. You're compelled to do it. It's not an option of whether you want to or not. You have to do it. It's like breathing.
Any of your approach changed?
I don't think so.
No, not really.
No.
Maybe a little bit more relaxed now that you've got more time since we're all locked down.
Yeah, because that dynamic changes from day to day, and you know, I think we both realize that you can't focus on what other people are doing and saying. You just have to continue to live your life. And when, you know, the big door gates get opened up, then we realize that that flow is going to bring with it whatever it brings with it, right? So there's going to be the clearinghouse of content. There's going to be a lot of people bringing out content. Then everyone's going to want to play shows, but really how many venues are left? And then what's the demand like? And what are people going to want to do? Are they immediately going to want to hear music? Will it be allowed, you know, to play music the same way? Everything's changing. So we realized that, I think, very early on that we just keep on doing what we're doing. Perhaps now capturing the visuals is going to be slightly different because, well, there's less pollution in the air. And so you change your focus, right?
So most of this has been done, I'm going to assume, by virtual collaboration.
Yeah.
So how are you finding collaborating in that manner?
Very interesting.
You want to expand on that?
It's not as, from my perspective, it's not as immediate as having someone sitting across from you and getting that immediate feedback. We did have a few sessions that we were able to do together while lockdown was lifted. And so that was something that was immediately obvious, was that...
Oh, absolutely. That was the most fun, to actually be in the same room. And, you know, like just playing ideas off of each other and getting immediate reaction rather than, you know, working across the net or transferring files back and forth and then waiting for the other person to sit down and work and then the other person to send it back. And then this back and forth, you know, like events of data corruption and, you know, things like that. But, we've always been able to do that, but it was so apparent, and I think it wasn't even just, you know, the technical approach to doing something, but to actually be in front of a human being after not being in front of a human being for so long, whether you were making music or not, but just to actually have that, you know, a connection, you know, to actually look across a room and see through into somebody's eyes.
Like this.
Yeah.
Now, right?
Yeah. This is a huge treat.
Yeah. This is lovely. So, how are you coping personally? Or how have you been coping personally?
I'll say Brian's been coping very well. Brian, how have I been coping?
I wouldn't say that exactly.
Ups and downs. Yeah, no doubt. There's days where, weeks where it's just hard to get motivated because in a way you don't, there are no timelines. Everything that we've been used to has been blown out the window. So you have to adopt new coping mechanisms, at least for me. And to motivate oneself to learn to do that and then to actually do it takes some time. Doctor said to me, enjoy the good days and learn to deal with the not so good days. And so if you apply that mentality and approach to our day to day, then when you're feeling creative, right, do it. And when you're not, don't beat yourself up.
Brian?
It's been interesting. I've always been a bit of a loner to begin with. I love my personal space. Isolation is, you know, kind of my day-to-day life most of the time. This was different because you didn't have an option. You didn't have the option to kind of say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to go and visit this person. I'm going to go and do something with this person or go out in public or, you know, aside from getting your groceries. And I think that hit me more than anything. The first couple of months, I don't even really remember doing anything. you know, I mean, luckily we were going, it was, you know, a spring. So you're going into nice weather, but I don't remember doing anything for probably about the first 90 days. You know, I think I spent most of the time in my backyard gardening or something like that. But yeah, I just kind of like sat out in the sun and kind of took that in, which was actually in its own right, actually quite nice, you know, just getting some fresh air. But the winter was really hard. That was a really tough one. And luckily, Sasha and I ended up doing sound for a TV series called Pink is In. So we ended up mixing the show at my home and doing some of the sound design for it and things like that. So we had about, what, 3 days, 3 or 4 days that we actually got to see each other and work on stuff. So that was a huge treat. But the rest of the time, it's kind of a blur.
Yeah. I think with a lot of people, even though a lot of musicians that I've talked to, a lot of them are loners and they like their own space. But the fact that choice was taken away from them,
right,
I think is what has hit everybody the hardest, is they don't, if you want to go out and visit somebody, you can't. If you want to meet for a pint, you can't. I mean, it's just, is they basically took our choice away from us is the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
The two songs chosen for this podcast are from an album called Day of the Dead. I was first introduced to the music of Conduit 3 years ago during a mini tour of a show I was working on. My driving co-pilot, lighting director Peter Genrich, asked if we could listen to some music for a lighting gig he was working on. With a mix of industrial, electronic, and rock with a touch of pop, Peter and I listened to that CD repeatedly over a 4-day period from Toronto to Chatham, Chatham to Windsor, Windsor to St. Catharines, and back to Toronto again. Have you ever sat or held someone you loved as they slowly took their last breath, passing from this life to the next? How desperately you hang on, willing to take their place, of the desire to keep them with you, the desire to stop your own pain. Take Your Place is also a song about that which we've lost, reaching out to us from wherever they are, letting us know they're still right here. It's going to be okay.
Don't leave me alone.
Live performance. This is it's obvious it's the key to development of any artist, and it doesn't matter how long you've been playing, whether it's 10 years, 5 minutes, or 30 years. What do you think the music scene is going to look like as we come out of this pandemic, especially for any artists, but particularly for younger artists?
I think that younger artists have had a hard time finding a platform to develop for the longest time. I'll say for the last 10 years. It's been harder to find venues. It's from a record label perspective, the development of an artist has been truncated to 5 minutes, where it used to be 3 years. For live music to happen, for songs to be fleshed out in a way that can only happen on a live stage, those days are fewer and farther between. Sure, you can rent a sound stage and invite 50 people and hope to, you know, through passing the bucket or charging a small amount to offset the costs. But it's next to impossible, I think, now. And so opening acts, will there be that many opening acts, you know? There's a headliner and then there's three opening acts at the Rock Pile. Who shows up to the first three, right? It's going to be a lot harder to develop on a live stage an artist.
You know, I'm going to agree with a lot of what Sasha was saying. I've been working in, you know, like supplying tech and stuff like that. You know, on a side note, you know, I was supplying technology for the touring industry and the broadcast world and things like that. And I got to see the effect, like the trickle down effect of what happened to the people that run the touring industry themselves. What people see on the surface is like, okay, well, you know, bands can't go out. They can't play. Or I can't go out and see a band. But what they seem to forget is there's a huge vine that goes from the artist to, you know, the venue, the backline companies, the bus drivers, the people that hold fleet of the tour buses, the guy that's working the hot dog stand in front of the venue. The trickle-down effect of what has happened with this, I mean, has decimated not only the you know, the artists and the support, but the companies that actually make these shows happen, the workers. A lot of them have gone on to, you know, try and find other work, whether it's, you know, the guy driving the tour bus or the guy or girl wrapping cable at the touring company. I mean, they've all been out of work. But now you're starting to see everybody booking tours, not in Canada, mind you, but especially in the United States. They're constantly announcing new tours and festivals and what have you. Personally, I think it's a little too soon. You're going to be putting a bunch of people in, you know, a confined space, and who knows what's going to happen with that. That's one thing. The other thing is they're putting so many bands in the same venue on the same bill, same festival, and they're doing it all at the same time. Not everybody has liquid cash, you know, fund money to go out right now because they've all been out of work. So you're going to go and see the one show. You're going to see the one festival. You're going to get your ticket and do your all-day event or your three-day event at some big rock show or what have you. And that's going to be your entertainment, you know, money for the next six months. What was interesting, though, is Live Nation has put in streaming services to in every single venue that they own, and they own pretty much every shed in North America. So they're planning on, you know, capitalizing on being able to, you know, broadcast events to people that probably don't feel like going out or can't go out or afraid to go out. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see what happens, especially this summer. This is going to be the barometer for what's going to happen over the next few years.
I think you're right. The streaming thing, too, locally or by Live Nation. It doesn't matter actually who's doing it. Because the local clubs, like the Horseshoe, for instance, the Mod Club, which has another name. There's a few others that are looking at the theaters. Yeah. And now you've got who's got the right to the stream. Who's getting paid? Mm-hmm. How often can they show? You know, so there's a whole lot of legalities are now coming up behind that because a lot of the club owners are figuring, well, we provided the equipment, you're using our, you know, et cetera, so we own them. And the musicians are going, but you don't own the songs.
And let's be clear, this is going to be
a very interesting thing that Live Nation is doing.
And this is not for the local bands coming up because they can't afford it. They can't afford to pay whatever they're charging at whatever venue.
Yeah, what was the nut on the Alma Combo for a day?
It's like $18,000, you know, like for a stroke to walk in and say, I want to rent this place.
Yeah, well, the Mono Whales just did the Alma Combo. Julian Taylor and there's a whole crew of them that are doing the streaming thing from the Horseshoe. Samantha Martin and Delta Sugar rented the theater in Belleville and did a stream last year. There's another one, I think, up in Owen Sound that's doing them. So they're doing so. But, you know, it's now been raised on Facebook and by Samantha and a few other people of, hang on a second here, who owns the streams?
Right.
After it's done, because they're all videoed. I mean, it's not like you stream and it's over and nobody has a copy of it. So how often can the venues play it over again? You know, if you're selling tickets to it, am I getting, what kind of revenue am I getting back from that? That there's like...
Mm-hmm. Is it going to be packaged into a DVD mm-hmm. or whatever
yep.
or future
it's,
format?
There's a whole bunch of stuff that right. they're now looking at because that's going to be an issue. And whether they're streaming a local artist or whether they're streaming Elton John, you can bet mm-hmm. that people like Elton John want their piece of it, and the local artists right. will too, because we've got a lack of venues.
Well, that's the other thing. If you got somebody playing a cover song in whatever venue, and it's being videoed, and I mean to this point, it hasn't really been addressed. But I mean, Pat, you bring up probably the biggest point that nobody is talking about, and it's the copyright on the performed music, because now this isn't just, you know, sound going off into the air and it doesn't exist anymore. This is something that is now, you've got the copyright for the song. There's a sync license now that's going to have to go into that. And to your point, who owns that footage? Okay. So yeah. If it's Live Nation, and I'm pretty sure Live Nation, as smart as they are looking forward going, great, touring's coming back. Hey, we're going to build this new facility for you. We're going to put in this new functionality. Would you like to, you know, engage the streaming button for your show? And the artist is going to sit there and go, yeah, absolutely, great. And at the end of it, artist is going to say, hey, by the way, like, can we get a copy of that? Sure. You can buy a license for it.
There's going to be new copyright issues coming down the
right.
pipe. So is 2020 going to be a career killer for a lot of bands that aren't very well established?
Well, and for techs as well. I see friends that, you know, I've been in the industry for a long time, and they're the veterans, the seniors, the old folks, and they've had a year off, and they were supposed to be on tour, you know, the end of the road tour was one band, and with all the time off, the management and the promoters and the bands, maybe they got a stipend of $1,000 in the beginning or somewhere halfway through this entire pandemic, but they've decided, well, you know what, I'm going to take my carpentry skills from the road and start my own business. They've now gone away. So the new crews that are coming out are these kids oftentimes, where the pay is cheaper, right? So the balance changes. And I think the old guys, from my experience, my friends are saying, yeah, this, I'm going to try and get as much as I can once everything starts moving again and the buses are going out on the road. But the bands that they're working for are on their last legs, right? They're doing their last round or two. And then after that, it's like, well, I'm not getting paid the same. If I go out with Rival Sons, I'm getting paid a third of what I'm getting paid if I go out with Kiss or Rush. And, well, we know where those last two bands are, right? So.
But what about the local artists, though? I mean, there were a lot of people that were just kind of out of the gate or maybe just been around for a couple of years.
Right.
Do you think that 2020 has sort of killed their career? We're into 2021. People still aren't playing.
Are they creating content? If they're creating content, then maybe not, right? Maybe they're just building their following. They're focusing their money and their efforts on that as opposed to focusing money and efforts on getting in a van, renting a van, putting a crew together, playing in shitty venues to, you know, half-empty houses. And trying to gain some traction. Maybe they're getting more traction this way, right? Oh, TikTok. I'm not going to go on TikTok, but it's a great way to get known. And yet still, when you realize, I read an article by Bob Lefsetz, and he says the whole TikTok thing, it sounds organic. It comes across as being organic, but it's not organic. They've got 100 managers that are scouring the web for what might work, and they're willing to pay for your education, and they're willing to pay for your rent and everything. You create 6 songs. They'll put them up on the roster. They'll pay other people to play those songs and incorporate them into a video, and then slowly they filter it down to the one song, and then they push the shit out of that one song, and that's how you get your song on TikTok. It is because Brian and I and you decided, oh, I'm going to put this on with my video of me dancing backwards. That's not how you become famous, but that's the way we perceive it.
That was Captain Beyond.
Yeah, and no one wants to see me dance.
Nor
dancing
I.
Madly backwards on a sea of air. Love that album. Brian, what's your take on that?
Kind of going back to what I was saying before, I mean, you know, you're still gonna play, you're still gonna make music. So I think if anybody had the right motivation or the right intention or the inspiration to do it before COVID, during COVID, after COVID, they're still gonna do it.
Okay, there were a number of artists that were ready to release last year before everything hit. Some released ahead of time, some released on schedule. Some decided to hold back. What would be the varying reasons for doing any of that? Why would you release during a pandemic as opposed to waiting until the possibility of being able to release when the venues are open?
Well, first off, I'd like to say that that entire question is way above my pay grade.
I'm just looking for assumptions.
Right.
I mean, Julian Taylor released The Ridge.
Right.
He was scheduled to release it in October, which was still in 2020. He actually released it a lot earlier, and he was pushed to release it because, I'm going to say pushed, but I think the people he was working with thought the album touched something, and they thought it would be a better idea to release early. Other artists released. Now, he went on to get nominated for 2 Junos for that album. It took off internationally, totally unexpectedly for Julian. There were other albums that were released in the fall, even a streaming event put on, and then...
Big Harry Stiff.
Yeah, it just seems to have quieted off. So what would precipitate? Why would one album make it and the other one just kind of fall off the edge? Why would you not want to release when you're able to tour?
Well, Julian has a sensitivity, I think, knowing him personally a little bit. I think he is a very sensitive being, aware.
Yeah.
And if the people that he was working with said, there's something here, you should release this now because you can... People will take it home and nurture it for this year while you're in lockdown. And I think that's what that record did. People really, it was something you could sit and listen to with a coffee and a cigarette. And it's an introspective, or a joint or whatever your crack may be. It is that type of record, I think, that grows on you and it's your baby. You own it personally, even though you have nothing to do with it other than being a listener. So he was smart doing that.
This next song, All I Want, has 50 Shades of Grey, Lestat, or a juicy Harlequin romance running through my mind when I listen to it. It can be about anything or nothing at all. Primitive, erotic, with dark shadows of the unknown that seem to beckon you, All I Want has a distinct pop music feel with some of the best lines I've heard in a long time. The taste of your mouth fills me with sin. The touch of your flesh feeds me again. The kiss of your lips, they scar me.
Thank you.
one of the questions that I had somewhere in here was, well, it was a point first, some of the research that I was doing last year, online sales of instruments. It was to the point where musicians couldn't get stuff online because everybody else was buying it. It was going crazy. The other half of that was musicians were going in and going, well, I used to play piano 10 or 15 years ago. Maybe I'll tinker with this again. Or you had a drummer playing guitar. You had a bassist, you know, on the drum. You know, they were all going and trying different instruments.
I'm seeing a lot of that now.
So
yeah.
you've got all of this time now, over a year of musicians creating music. A lot of them have been creating it on different instruments. When you chord on a guitar, it's totally different from chording on a piano or messing around with the drums. The whole feel is different. So the song, the feel of the song becomes different. So the question is, do you think maybe out of all of this, there might be a new renaissance in music coming?
Yeah, ukulele music is just going skyrocketing.
Actually, it is.
Right. I don't. So house music is definitely had a resurge. I think you're absolutely right. People are picking up instruments, but maybe it's just to make themselves happy, you know, and to share it with their friends as opposed to this whole thing of one day rock star, next day cab driver, you know, has settled in and people go, yeah, I should do this for myself and my neighbors, and if something comes of it, great. But if not, you know, it's, I don't know.
Hope so. I hope people at least maybe start experimenting a little bit. But I mean, to Sasha's point, I mean, it should just be for yourself. It should just be, you know, whether it's just for fun or for your own, you know, mental well-being, if it, just something that makes you feel good. That's amazing. And the fact that people went out and bought, you know, things that, hey, I've got the time now. I've always wanted to learn how to play this instrument. Or I used to play this instrument and I got rid of it and I wish I never did. And now I'm going to go get another one because I've got the time to put into it. That's amazing. And I really hope that that's what happened. If, you know, some new style comes out of that, amazing. Because maybe that person that just played an acoustic guitar for fun, well, maybe they, you know, they went and they got a drum machine or a keyboard or something like that, and they heard some little sound that, you know, it was like a dog bark or something like that, that gave them some idea, and then now we're going to have music for dogs. Or, you know, that'll be the new thing. Who knows? I'm just
that'll be the new Pink Floyd.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it was the same thing. I mean, like, everybody's a broadcaster now, whether they know it or not. If you got a smartphone with a camera on it and you're putting stuff on social media, doing whatever, you're a broadcaster. But it exploded over the past year and a half. And a lot of the tech that I was selling and representing was stuff specifically for doing podcasting. And it exploded to the point where we couldn't get the stuff in fast enough, you know, because it was either coming out of Australia or it was coming out of China and what have you. So it would take, you know, like twice as long for the stuff to show up, and then it would sell out even more and even more, to the point of where, you know, we were doing so much stuff that we all got fired. Actually, we got fired within 30 days of COVID without warning. So the distributor that we were contracted by just said, oh, well, thanks, we got it from here. You're all fired. So
do you think artists in general are more flexible? One of the latest...
Thanks to yoga, yes.
Yeah, the latest word I've been hearing just in the last year is the word pivot.
If I hear that one more time, I swear to God.
One of my interviews last year, I had somebody, it was Samantha Martin, used the word pivot, and I went, wow, I've never heard that. And going forward, it just like seems to be the new buzzword, pivot.
Well, right. To change it to adapt.
No, you know what? You know what
I
happened?
Say flexible or adaptable. Yeah. Are they?
Way too many Zoom meetings, and that's a Zoom meeting.
Meetings.
Like nomenclature. Accelerate. Velocity.
But
know.
Are they? I mean,
levers. Yeah.
But are artists? I mean, you typically artists are known for having very creative approaches. So they can swivel, adapt, pivot, whatever. I mean, can they or not?
Right.
You know.
Not everyone's supposed to be a video editor, though, right? We've seen that. Not everyone is meant to be an audio engineer because they might be tone deaf, right? They might not be good with technology. Not everyone's supposed to play the fagot or the bassoon or something, you know, because it's our violin, because it's kind of annoying unless you know how to do it. It takes years and years and years unless you have some natural God-given ability or whoever gave it to you. But so, I don't want to say that you should dig your heels in and just like this. No, you should be open and try different stuff, but don't assume that because you have this that you're a videographer or...
Brian?
My opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. It's there's no filter anymore, right? So there's no... It's just everybody's got something to say and everybody thinks that everyone else wants to hear what they have to say.
And that might be
and
good,
I've got
right?
Nothing to, I don't know. I've got nothing to say, really. Or I guess I do because I'm
We're
on
here.
Because I'm on a podcast.
But, I mean, you know, I look at Billie Eilish's record and the way she sings and the way the record is mixed is, for me, it's unique. It's not very common. It came out at a time.
It's brilliant.
And, yeah.
I love it. Yeah. So what do you think it's going to take to get people back out to see live music?
A willingness and a sense of security.
Yeah, probably some nerve.
Nerve?
Yeah.
You've got some nerve.
Well, just, you know, how should I say this? Yeah, well, more to Sasha's comment, yeah, confidence to know that, you know, they're not going to, you know, fall ill or, you know, cause something else to happen. I think it's really going to come down to that. And, hopefully there'll just be places for people to actually perform because I don't know. There's been so many that have closed. As I was mentioning before, like the companies that actually put these things on, a lot of them are gone, at least in Ontario.
Do you think the pandemic has encouraged collaboration among artists that you wouldn't normally collaborate with? Everybody's at home. Nobody's going to say, I'm on a tour for the next 6 months. Sorry.
The likelihood of people saying yes is greater. The likelihood of someone having the nerve or the impetus to come up with the idea, oh, it would be great to work with you, John. I'm going to email you because now I can get in touch with you. So I would say so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One of the things that popped into my mind was the fact that the whole world has basically been on a level playing field now for over a year. I mean, nobody, it doesn't matter who you are, has been allowed to perform. Everything's been stopped. Do you think that for local artists, because they didn't or still don't quite yet have the competition of the larger named artists coming in, that this is a good opportunity for them to shine, to start getting their name out there in their own local communities? You know, we have Eat Local, Grow Local, Shop Local. What about Listen Local?
Well, if in Toronto there is a little area on the east side down by the water and it is called the Beaches area. Well, the Beaches used to be a pretty hopping area for music. And I think a lot of the, $3,000baby carriage pushers and all the groovy people coming in, they said, I don't like to have that loud music playing and the people coming in and parking all over the place and pissing all over my lawn. And so a lot of venues have closed down there. Mm-hmm. That is one example and where I think that, no, that might have been supportive, but is not so supportive anymore. I also know that the larger venues, the El Macambos and the Phoenixes, and they're all going to be inundated with the recording acts. And so there's not going to be a lot of room for local bands, upstarts, to find a night to be able to play. There might be creative genius in promoters finding new venues, outdoor venues, because it's easier to socially distance where you can bring homegrown talent. Hopefully. Maybe. I doubt it.
That's so maybe not.
I don't even know what to think about it. I've never seen, real, honest support for the arts. I mean, people say it's like, oh, you know, I like to go out and see shows. Like, yeah, but are you really? Are you buying the T-shirt? Are you buying the record? Are you really, truly helping to promote that local artist?
Is Factor helping to promote the local artist, or are they just pushing money through to the label bands, right, that we all know? Yeah. I don't want to name names, but shall we, you know?
You can name names if you want.
Do the Gowns and the Kim Mitchells and, yeah. And you know, the bands that had something going on in the 80s. The bands that I worked with, they all sucked on the teat of Factor. Well, that's great, but it doesn't do anything for the upstarts, right? And I know that when there are radio incentives and there's these homegrown contests, that's all a piece of shit anyway, because having been in that and having been the first recipient for CFNY's Discovery to Disc project, where $100,000 was given to us, but not really, you know, that money went to a studio, that money went to a mobile recording setup, and all these people got paid, and the product went nowhere. Lawyers got paid too, by the way, but that's another story. And did it help Honeymoon Suite? Did it help the Bare Naked Ladies? Probably. A little bit, right? But, again, we need to band together, as John said, be positive, not poo-poo on the past and what's gone wrong, but learn from the past and open discussions, open conversation and think tanks, and we got to spend money doing research. I hate research.
I love research.
I know, it's great, but at some point it's got to stop and action's got to happen,
well,
right?
The action, yes.
No opinion.
No opinion?
Yeah. I just, you know, if you say you're going to support local music, actually go out and do it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's as simple as that.
Don't hit the like button. Hit the share button. It works different. You know, spread the word. Don't just go, you know, out of obligation, you know, hitting the like button or like, you know, the heart emoji thing or whatever. It's really bullshit.
Interested really and attending means absolutely nothing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
You might be. Do you think there's been an increase of respect for the contributions of the music community?
No.
During the pandemic?
Sadly, no.
Recognition?
It's being devalued. Every day it's being devalued.
I mean, most music these days is wallpaper. And if you're going to do something, do it well, do it good. And I guess for some people, maybe that's just not their cup of tea. So most of the performances that I've seen, I would say have been very apologetic, you know, like, thanks for coming to our show. Thanks for showing up. Thank you for this. Like you're doing a big disservice. And people got lazy. They just go up on stage and just
dress as they are during the day.
Yeah, and just do like this really half-assed performance. So I don't blame the, you know, people for not giving a shit. Why would I want to like call my radio station and you know, request you know, the song of whatever band that I just saw last night, because, you know, it was a really half-assed performance, the guitars weren't in tune or whatever it was. And it just sucked. And there was five other bands doing the exact same thing. There's no excitement. There's no show. There's nothing. So how can the listener get excited and go, oh, I got to tell everybody about what I just saw or what I just heard or whatever it is? And it hasn't really been done for a while.
What have you found to be the most difficult or challenging thing during the pandemic?
Sustaining an erection.
We'll keep that one in.
It's just, you know, I got to go. So, you know, on to the next
It's
going to
be exhaling stereo, I think.
Yeah. Could you mix it that way?
Yeah,
that
would be awesome.
Okay. Keep that one.
Oh, man. The most difficult thing?
Yeah,
during this?
Yeah, what's been the most difficult or challenging thing for you
staying
to deal with?
Past 11 p.m.? I don't know.
Focus? Like
focus is, you know, to have too much time on your hands. It's well, what do? I can basically do anything within these four walls, but I've already cleaned the house. I've already done this. I've already done that. Cooked a bunch of stuff and whatever. So now what? And I don't know. I can't sit in front of Netflix, you know, like every day, all day. I can't do that. Yeah, I think focus, inspiration, things like that. That's probably been the most difficult thing.
Again, we get our inspiration through interaction, right?
Exactly.
And if you can't be outside, if you can't be with your mates to discuss. I mean, you can do it by phone, I guess, you know, discuss ideas and through Zoom chats and everything. Maybe it saved a lot of people. I don't know.
I think there's a connection just from when another person is in the room. There's a certain density that kind of...
The air changes.
The auras start intertwining with each other, and as much as we can kind of enjoy certain things, you know, we have a family Zoom every Saturday, which has been pretty religious and quite lovely, actually, since we have family in Montreal. But I think that when you get a chance to actually connect with another human being in the same room, yes, the air changes, the density changes, there's another presence, which is, I think, we're built to feel that anyways. Yeah. And when you take that part of it away, that isolation becomes extremely difficult.
How about for you? What has been the hardest thing?
Yeah,
well,
Pat.
This isn't my interview.
Well, it could be.
What's been the most challenging for me? People not being around. I'm very much a people person. Not being able to go to the festivals and the clubs to meet not just the musicians, but people there and the photography and the energy. That's been the most challenging for me.
You know, so, it just came to me as you said about photography. I think maybe one of the biggest things is about capturing the moment.
Yeah,
we haven't had a chance to capture the moments over these last 16 months or whatever it's been. Yeah.
We're being forced to look, consider moments as something different and to see beauty in things that we never even took notice of before or gave much thought to, right?
Which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
It's kind of the stop and smell the roses thing.
Yeah.
What have you learned from all this?
I'm not infallible, number one. Number two, there's so much to learn, and it takes wanting to get up, and it takes wanting to learn. But once you actually get up and learn, start the process of learning, or asking questions, doing the research, as you say, right? I think that's really the inspiring thing. It's like, oh, there's a world out there of other stuff, right? Delving deeper into Pro Tools, which I have resisted for decades because I like the tactile sense of having a mixing board in front of me and being able to turn knobs. You know, being able to get links and actually having the time to watch something and going down rabbit holes for knowledge and insight.
Use your time effectively. Don't wait for tomorrow, because tomorrow might not come. I think a lot of people have learned that same lesson too over the past year. Tell the people around you that you love them. If you do, learn something new every day. Take a chance. Just throw caution to the wind just a little bit, you know. And by saying that, I mean, like, try something new, you know, learn, you know, or try a different food or something like that. It just use your own gauge for that. But I think that's pretty much it, you know, as far as maybe what I've learned or kind of reevaluated over the past year.
Right. So we've had to pay attention to what someone is saying. We've had to follow rules. We've had to look out for one another, or we're supposed to look out for one another. And yet you see a lot of division and a lot of anger. Yeah. And this is my right, and this is, I'm supposed to be able to do this, and no one's going to take this away from me. You're thinking about yourself, but I'm, you know, that doesn't show that you're caring for me or the fellow man. It's
the bigger picture.
Right.
It's always a bigger picture.
Two positives to come out of this, one personally and one professionally.
Reconnecting with friends through the internet and through situations much like this. Committing to that, because it is a commitment, I think, to show up on time and to come in with an open heart and open ears and make something of it. So from a personal side, so that goes for family and friends. And professionally, being able to work on music and being able to add new tools and tricks to my gig bag.
Personally and professionally?
Hmm.
Kind of back to what I think answered on the last thing, where it's like, personally, yeah, just like, again, tomorrow might not come. Take a chance. Love with abandon. Enjoy and experience the time that you have here. That's what I learned. Professionally, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer, and try, same thing, try, you know, a couple of different new things that you haven't tried before. Explore whatever avenues you can. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone, and just throw caution to the wind with life and your profession.
I mean, we're old enough now that what's the worst that can happen? They'll hang up on the phone, they'll say no, the experiment fails, you dust yourself off and you do it again, right? I think this situation has taught us all that we don't have control. Control is a fucking illusion, and, you know, we're going to try and hammer it for as long as possible that I've got everything under control. Nothing is under control. Control is under everything, right? It's right on the bottom there.
So if you could choose one artist or band that you've dreamed of either performing with, even as a young person, or opening for, sharing a stage with, preferably alive at this time, who would that be?
Peter Gabriel. It would be Frank Zappa, but he did.
Yeah, unfortunately. Brian? Yeah,
I would probably go for Peter Gabriel as well. That would be an amazing experience. Evanescence. I'd love I wouldn't even like sing or play or anything like that, but just to actually stand next to her while she's singing would be an absolute incredible experience. Hailstorm, I would love to play with that band or just jam. I think they actually do some really incredible stuff. Nine Inch Nails would be the obvious one. I'd love to perform with Skinny Puppy. That would be a lot of fun.
That's good. You got a nice little bucket list.
Those would be on the top of the list.
What brings you joy now?
Cooking, gardening. I love cooking. Just got my vegetables in, so they're basking in the sun right now. Those two things probably bring me the most joy.
Sasha, what brings you joy?
Right like that. three things.
Other than that.
Should we do a described video?
Yeah. There will be a described video later on, yeah.
My wife and my friends, my children, and... So let's rephrase that. Family and friends and music. Food, obviously. Building stuff, fixing stuff, renovating, re-renovating, refinishing, finishing. Those things bring me joy.
That's it. Unless you have anything else that you would like to add.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity to think outside the box.
Oh, thank you, Pat. I mean, for the past couple of years, you've been such a huge supporter. You've been just so nice to us and so generous. So we want to thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming all the way from Orangeville.
From up the street.
Up the street.
Shaving and washing.
And thanks to John Jameson.
Thank you,
and
John.
Thank you, John Jameson.
And Cindy.
And thank you for Soundhouse Studios. And I know he's recording this, but I have a little little thing at the end that I'm... John, and I'm going to be coming back in here to record the opening, the introduction.
The little stems.
And little stems for the end.
Yeah.
Thank you to John Jameson and Cindy Jameson at Soundhouse Studio.
What a great space.
Great seeing you guys.
It's a great space. This interview was recorded at Soundhouse Studio, located on Eastern Avenue in Toronto, Canada. Owned by producer-engineer John Jameson, John is also my co-editor and mixer for all the interviews we record at Soundhouse. He makes us all sound good, and me sound like I know what I'm doing. With respect for the times we live in right now, all appropriate safety measures are taken during any in-person interview recorded at Soundhouse. Many thanks go to Eddie and Quincy Bullen and Paul DeLong for writing and performing the fantastic theme music for the show. And to all of you who have tuned in to listen to what these artists have to say, thank you for taking the time and inviting us into your cars, offices, and homes. I am Pat Blythe. You're listening to Love the Music. Have a great day and a wonderful evening.